Okay, so let's start. So welcome everyone for this Friday's seminar talk. So this is our second last Oxford CSML seminar this term. So the speaker today is Chuan Zhou from Texas A&M University. So I met Chuan back in 2018 when he was a postdoc at Rice University, and he visited University of Toronto, my PhD supervisor Jeff Rosenthal. And then started from that time, we worked together. Now he moved to, I think 2 years ago, he moved to Texas A&M University, and now he's a system professor there. So our collaboration is very enjoyable and successful, I would say. So I highly recommend you talk to him if you have some common interest with him. He has a very broad research interest other than Bayesian methodology and the computation we will hear today. He also worked on statistical genetics, graphical models, stochastic control, and experimental design. So today he will talk about complexity of local MCMC method for high dimensional model selection. I believe it includes some of our joint work also. Also his own work with his student at Texas. So I will leave it to Chuan.
So thank you very much for the introduction. Thank you very much for having me here. It's really a huge pleasure, a huge honor for me to speak about my research at this seminar. So today I would like to talk about some of my recent works on local MCMC methods for high dimensional model selection. And actually, the talk is mostly based on my recent joint work with Jing and Gareth Roberts, Jeffrey Rosenthal, and Dudika Vets. And some results are based on a joint work with my student Hyunyeon Cham, and I will also mention one result, well, which comes from an ongoing project. So before I start my talk, I would like to first share with you guys a story behind the birth of MCMC. Perhaps a lot of you already know this. So the Metropolis algorithm was first implemented by Dr. Rosenbluth, the woman in this picture, in 1953. Dr. Rosenbluth, she is actually from Texas, and she received her PhD at the age of 22. And shortly after that, she implemented the Metropolis algorithm. And at that time, well, of course, she coded everything in machine language. But after she implemented the Metropolis algorithm, she left academia, and she probably never worked on research again. And in 2003, so someone interviewed her about this very first implementation of Metropolis algorithm. And she said that she was very surprised that someone still even remembers this algorithm. Well, but as we all know well, not only do we still remember this algorithm, but actually we have been working extensively on the theory and the methodology of MCMC in the past maybe 30 years. Unfortunately, Dr. Rosenbluth passed away at the end of the last year. And this is the obituary posted on the IMS website, and you can find the complete story of her life in New York Times. And I would say it's a very inspiring, very amazing, very unique story. Well, anyway, let's start my talk, and let's first quickly review what is the Metropolis-Hastings algorithm. So in this talk, we'll be mostly concerned with a finite state space. So I'm just going to use this big S to denote an arbitrary finite state space. And I will use pi to denote our targeted distribution on this space. Let's assume the support of pi is just given by S. So given any transition matrix K, we can construct another transition matrix P according to this formula. And we all know that, well, just by construction, this new transition matrix P is reversible with respect to pi. So if P is further irreducible and aperiodic, then this Markov chain will converge to pi. And if we can simulate this Markov chain, then the samples generated from this Markov chain can be used to approximate the targeted distribution pi. And the one important observation here is that to simulate this Markov chain, we only need to know an unnormalized version of pi. And we can say this P, well, defines a Michalowicz-Hastings algorithm for sampling from pi. And for this Michalowicz-Hastings algorithm, well, we say this matrix K is the proposal. And this minimum term is called the acceptance probability. The meaning is pretty straightforward. So if we want to simulate this P, then we just, well, in each iteration, propose a new state according to the proposal distribution, and then we decide whether to accept it or not according to the acceptance probability. And the Michalowicz-Hastings algorithms, and more generally speaking, MCMC methods have been widely used in Bayesian statistics, because in Bayesian statistics, very often we are faced with very complicated posterior distributions whose normalizing constant is not tractable. And henceforth, I will just refer to pi as the posterior distribution. And in this talk, we are mostly interested in a class of problems called model selection. And perhaps this is the most important class of statistical problems defined on discrete state spaces. And for these problems, the size of the state space S typically depends on a parameter P, which is just the number of variables or the number of features we have in our data set. Well, one example is just the variable selection. For variable selection, the state space S is the collection of all the binary sequences with length equal to P. And the size of S, of course, is 2 to the P. And another example is the structured learning problem, where we want to identify, well, the so-called DAG, directed acyclic graph, underlying our multivariate data. And for these problems, the state space S is the collection of all the DAGs with P nodes. And then S, the size of S grows super exponentially with P. Well, we will be mostly interested in high dimensional settings where P is much larger than the sample size N. So we have to impose some sparsity constraint so that the model is identifiable. But even if we take into account the sparsity constraint, in most cases, the size of S still grows super polynomially with P. So of course we may wonder, well, then are the MCMC algorithms efficient enough for these high dimensional problems? Because theoretically speaking, we can always say compared with approximate methods like variational Bayes or maybe the ABC method, MCMC is asymptotically exact, because if we can generate infinitely many samples from MCMC, we are able to exactly recover the posterior. But of course, in reality, especially for high dimensional problems, we really wonder, say, how fast can these MCMC algorithms converge? If it cannot converge, you know, in a reasonable amount of time, then it's probably not that useful. And for these high dimensional problems, a very useful property that very often we want to verify for our MCMC algorithm is called rapid mixing. We say an MCMC algorithm is rapidly mixing if its mixing time grows only polynomially with the complexity parameters N and P. Because the state space can grow super polynomially with P. So actually rapid mixing is a very informative property. It tells us that, well, our algorithm, the complexity of our algorithm grows much more slowly compared to the problem size. And in recent years, a method called the locally informed MCMC has become pretty popular. And to explain what is locally informed MCMC, well, let's first introduce some notation. So I'm going to use this nx to denote the so-called neighborhood of the point x. And it is just a collection of all the points that I can propose given the current point x. And now in practice, I would say that for almost every Michalowicz-Hastings algorithm defined on discrete state space, this neighborhood only grows, the size of the neighborhood only grows polynomially with P. And the standard way, well, to implement a Metropolis algorithm is to use the so-called random walk proposal, which just means that, well, given the neighborhood, I'm going to propose one neighboring state randomly with equal probability. So we can write K as this. Here one, of course, is the indicator function. For Mitchell Hastings algorithms on finite state spaces, well, actually for any Markov chains on finite state spaces, we can describe the Markov chain as a graph, right? And here in this picture, I'm using these black dots to represent the states on my state space. And if two states are neighbors, then let's connect them with a line. So if we look at this state x0, then this x0 has six neighbors, x1, x2, blah, blah, until x6. And these blue bars indicate, well, how large the posterior probability is at that point. Now, if we use the random walk, well, Michell-Hastings algorithm, and at the point x0, I'm just going to randomly draw one neighbor among these six states randomly with equal probability. And for this distribution, well, probably we would say that at the point x0, maybe we want to move to x4 because the posterior mass looks pretty large on the point x4. And the posterior mass on the other five points, I mean, x1, x2, x3, x5, x6, are actually smaller than the posterior probability of x0. So intuitively speaking, we would say the best move seems to be from x0 to x4. And the proposal probability of this move is just 1/6 because we are using the random walk proposals. So it means that, well, on average, we probably need maybe say around six iterations to move from x0 to x4. And this heuristic reasoning also tells us that the mixing time of the Markov chain, the mixing time of this Michell-Hastings algorithm, random walk Michell-Hastings algorithm on this finite state space needs to be at least say as large as the neighborhood size. Because we need say approximately, for example, six iterations here to move from x0 to x4. Oh, I forgot to define what is the mixing time. I will define it later, but roughly speaking, mixing time just tells us how many iterations we need for the chain to reach stationarity, okay. And then the idea of the locally informed proposals is that, well, since we actually can tell that, you know, this X4 is a much better move than all the other five neighboring states, then why not, let's say, just propose X4 with larger probability? And this is kind of the motivation behind the so-called locally informed proposals. So given the neighborhood, let's tune our proposal probabilities. Let's evaluate the posterior landscape pi in the current neighborhood, and then let's propose those states with larger posterior probabilities. So if at point x0 for this example, we'll probably propose x4 in the next step if we use locally informed proposals. So here is the mathematical definition of the locally informed proposals. Let's use f to denote any an arbitrary non-negative function, and then let's define a new proposal matrix kf according to this formula. This indicator function 1nx just means that we are still considering the same neighborhood as the previous random walk Michell-Hastings. And according to this formula, we are going to propose a neighboring state y with probability proportional to f pi y over pi x. And because we have introduced these proposal weights, so we need to calculate this normalizing constant zx on the denominator. So this is the zx is the normalizing constant for our informed proposal distributions. And according to our previous heuristic arguments, we would say that, of course, we want to choose some function f that is non-decreasing because we want to assign larger proposal weights to those states with larger posterior probabilities. But one main disadvantage of this locally informed MSM scheme is that, so to implement this informed proposals, we have to evaluate the posterior landscape pi in the current neighborhood. We have to evaluate the pi for every y in the current neighborhood so that we will be able to calculate this normalizing constant and then, we can exactly calculate the proposal probabilities. But of course, this can take a lot of time. Although the neighborhood size, well, it's much smaller compared to the whole state space. But if P is really large, then this local evaluation may take a lot of time. And although this, well, and I want to say that although this locally informed MCMC framework was just recently proposed by Sanella in a JASA paper in 2020, but actually this idea of locally evaluating pi in the current neighborhood has been widely used in many other MCMC methods, and it has also been used in other non-MCMC methods. So for all these methods that rely on this idea of locally evaluating pi, okay, we can ask the following question. Can these methods achieve a sufficiently fast convergence rate that can offset the cost of computing this normalizing constant Zx in every iteration? And to the best of our knowledge, this question has never been rigorously addressed for a high-dimensional statistical problem. And this is what we are going to do in today's talk. We are going to answer this question for the variable selection problem. And before I talk about, before I introduce our algorithm and talk about how we do the proof for the mixing time, so I would like to first offer some general intuition about this problem. So to be able to analyze the convergence rates of an MCMC algorithm for a model selection problem, we want to know something about this posterior distribution pi. We want to be able to say something about how this pi looks like, because the state space grows super polynomially with P, and very often it goes exponentially or even super exponentially with P. So of course, I mean, we don't expect rapid mixing can hold for any pi, right? We have to be able to say something about the pi so that it is possible to prove, say, something like rapid mixing. And the one thing that is very natural to assume from a statistical point of view is the so-called strong selection consistency. For a Bayesian model selection procedure, we say that it has strong selection consistency if for some point x star, we have the posterior probability of x star goes to one in probability with respect to the true data generating process. And of course, this x star can be interpreted as the true model. So if we think about a classical asymptotic regime where P is fixed and N goes to infinity, well, such kind of consistency results are really expected. And in the high dimensional settings, well, things are actually pretty similar. So all we need is that the sample size is not too small compared to P, then we should have, say, such kind of consistency results. We should be able to recover the true model from the data. And if the posterior distribution really concentrates a single best model X star, then according to the Markov chain theory, we actually know that the mixing time of the MCMC is just equivalent to the heating time of this best model. And intuitively, this seems to be pretty reasonable, and actually it makes a lot of practical sense as well, because if pi concentrates on one best model, then you know, our goal is just to identify this single best model. So how to prove this strong selection consistency? So one way is to show that this posterior distribution pi is unimodal, and the unique mode is sufficiently sharp. I know that, well, probably a lot of you have some questions about this about this strong selection consistency and this unimodal condition, and I will return to this unimodal condition in the last section of my talk. But for the moment, I just want to make one remark. That is, even if we can prove, even if we can show the posterior distribution is unimodal on the model space, we actually cannot really say that much about how the posterior distribution looks like. So let me explain this point using some examples. So this is a bivariate normal distribution with two independent coordinates. And here I only plot this distribution in the first quadrant. And it's, well, I mean, this is a pretty perfect unimodal distribution. And when I was saying unimodal distributions, I guess a lot of us are thinking about distributions that look like this. Now let's consider another example, okay? So so now let the state space S, well, just be the collection of 9 points, 1, 2, 3 times 1, 2, 3. And let's consider this posterior distribution pi. And for this state space, well, we will just use the most natural neighborhood relation. That is, I will say two states, 2 points are neighbors if the Euclidean distance between the 2 points is equal to one. Then using this neighborhood relation, and if we look at this, well, this posterior landscape, then we actually can tell that, you know, this posterior distribution is also unimodal. Although it may look a little bit strange, but actually it is unimodal. So we may, let's say we may first look at, well, this point 1, 1. Then the point 1, 1 has two neighbors, 1, 2 and 2, 1. 1, 1 is not a local mode because the point 2, 1 has a larger posterior probability. The point 2, 1 is not a local mode either because the point 3, 1 has a larger posterior probability. And actually, if we simulate a Mitropoulos-Hastings algorithm for sampling from this posterior distribution, then, and let's say we initialize the chain at the point 1, 1, then we probably will see that the chain can move along this black path. It will move from 1, 1 to 2, 1, and then 3, 1, blah, blah. And then eventually it will reach the mode at the point 1, 3. So this posterior distribution is also unimodal, but it looks very different from the previous bivariate normal example. And of course we can make it continuous. And if we make this distribution continuous, then we will have something that looks like this. It's very different from this perfect unimodal distributions, but this is still unimodal. This is what I mean by when I was saying that even if we can say the posterior distribution is unimodal, we don't really know that much about the shape of the posterior distribution. It can still be pretty irregular. And although you may say, well, this example looks pretty artificial, but actually I would say for model selection problems like variable selection, this example is really describes, this example really gives, you know, a pretty typical scenario that we will encounter, because the variables we have in a high dimensional setting, they are correlated. And the correlation structure among these p variables can be pretty complicated. And I want to make this point because in the literature, very often we see that, well, people justify why their MSMC algorithms are useful by considering, say, a high dimensional setting and by assuming that the posterior distribution has independent coordinates. But I would say that, well, I mean, of course, those analyses are pretty useful. It provides us with a lot of insights into the behavior of the MSMC algorithm. But an assumption like independent coordinates is not really realistic in the high dimensional setting. And it is something that, you know, we probably can never prove using the statistical theory. And on the contrary, this unimodal assumption is something that we can prove, is something we can justify according to the statistical theory, because all we need to require is that the sample size be sufficiently large. And the point is that, although the unimodal distribution may sound to be restrictive, okay, at the first glance, but actually the posterior distribution can still look pretty complicated, pretty irregular. And that kind of gave rise to a lot of you know, difficulties in the theoretical analysis of our MCMC algorithms on these posterior for these posterior distributions. And next, well, we will just focus on the variable selection problem, and I will show you what algorithm we can propose for the variable selection problem, and I will show you that it can, our algorithm can achieve a surprisingly fast mixing rate. So let's just consider the standard sparse linear regression model y equals to x beta plus epsilon, where epsilon represents the normal IID errors. And x is the n by p design matrix, where n is the sample size, p is the number of variables. And because we are interested in the high dimensional settings where p is much greater than n, so we will impose the sparsity constraint. So we assume that most entries of beta are zero, or at least the most entries of beta are negligible. And for this variable selection problem, I'm going to use gamma to denote a state of our state space. And this is the index set of the non-zero entries of beta. In other words, gamma is the set of variables that have non-negligible effects. And the goal of variable selection, of course, is to identify, is to learn this gamma from the observed data. And I will use this M as zero to denote our model space for this variable selection problem. Okay. So M as zero is the collection of all the subsets of on the integers 1 to p with size less than or equal to s0. So this s0 is the sparsity parameter, and it may grow with p. And actually, we want to assume this s0 goes to infinity as n goes to infinity. So this is the model space for our variable selection problem. And for the variable selection problem, I guess we all know the most classical MCMC solution, which is called the add-delete swap sampler. So for every state gamma in our state space, let's define three different neighborhoods. And let me use, say, n-add, n-del, n-swap to denote these three neighborhoods. So n-add, of course, it is the collection of all the neighboring states that we can move to by adding one covariate to the current model. And n-del is the states that we can move to by removing one covariate. And the n-swap is the states that we can move to by swapping one covariate in the current model with one covariate that is not in the current model. And of course, we can check that, well, the size of the addition and the deletion neighborhood is just equal to p, and the size of the swap neighborhood is given by this. And using these add-delete swap moves, then we can define a random walk Mitchell-Hastings algorithm. For example, here we can let's consider this proposal scheme with probability 1/2. Let's just randomly propose one addition or deletion move with equal probability. With probability 1/2, let's propose one swap move with equal probability. And this random walk Mitchell-Hastings algorithm is also called a symmetric random walk Mitchell-Hastings, because you can check the proposal probability from gamma to gamma prime is always equal to the proposal probability from gamma prime to gamma. Although this algorithm looks pretty naive, but I want to say that because of its simplicity, it's actually widely used among practitioners. It is pretty easy, pretty straightforward to implement. And the idea behind it is also easy to understand. And in a seminal paper published in 2016 on Annals of Statistics by Yun Yang, Michael Jordan, and Martin Wainwright, it is shown that under mild high dimensional assumptions, this kind of naive symmetric random walk Mitchell-Hastings algorithm is actually rapidly mixing. So the complexity of this random walk Mitchell-Hastings algorithm only grows polynomially with n and p. And the order of their mixing time bound, well, and this mixing time bound can be interpreted as the complexity of this random walk Mitchell-Hastings algorithm. This mixing time bound is roughly given by this expression. I say roughly here because I have omitted some hyperparameters which are not really very important. So it is Pn s0 squared times log p. And the proof of their mixing time bound relies on the canonical path method. And it's kind of the most widely used method for studying the convergence of Markov chains on finite state spaces. And the main idea of their proof, well, it's actually just based on that strong selection consistency. So we verify the strong selection consistency for the variable selection problem, and we prove that the Poisson distribution with high probability will be unimodal. And then you can use this path method and show that, well, the random walk Mitchell-Hastings algorithm is rapidly mixing. But of course, given that the random walk algorithm already performs well, pretty well, then we may ask, how fast can the mixing time of an informed MCMC algorithm for variable selection be? And of course, we want to prove that the mixing time of an informed algorithm is much faster than the mixing time of the random walk algorithm. Otherwise, theoretically, we cannot really say why we should prefer a locally informed proposal scheme. So the main challenges for this analysis, well, so I guess there are two main challenges for the analysis of the MCMC algorithms for this variable selection problem. First of all, although we can say that we under some high dimensional assumptions, we can prove the Poisson distribution is unimodal, and actually this unimodality would imply that given any, say, if we are at a model which is not the true model, then we can always move to a better model by adding one covariate or removing one covariate. And here, let me use this gamma star to denote the true set, to denote the true model, and I will refer to the covariates in this gamma star as influential covariates. And the other covariates will be just called non-influential. So the idea is that, well, if the current model is missing some influential covariate, well, then maybe we can use some addition move to increase the Poisson probability. And if we have already selected all the influential covariates, and we have also included some non-influential covariates, then maybe we can remove some non-influential covariates, and then we can arrive at a better model. But the problem here is that because of the dependent structure among these variables, so actually the posterior landscape of the posterior landscape can still be pretty irregular in the sense that, well, beyond this, we cannot really see much beyond this unimodality. For example, although intuitively, we may conjecture that if the sample size is really large, then perhaps the posterior probability will always increase if we add an influential covariate, and the posterior probability will increase if we remove a non-influential covariate. But actually, in general, these claims are not right. So in general, we cannot say that adding any influential covariate can increase the posterior probability. Also, we can say that, well, there always with high probability, there always exists one such good move, but we cannot make claims like this. We cannot say any addition of an influential covariate will increase the posterior probability. And this is just because the p variables can be correlated. And perhaps it is helpful to recall the previous toy example. The point here is that, well, although the posterior distribution is unimodal, but it doesn't mean that the posterior probability will increase whenever we move in a direction pointing to the mode. Okay. So for example, in this example, if we move from 1,1 to 1,2, then actually the posterior probability decreases a lot. So actually here, we cannot move in the direction pointing to the mode. And that's exactly, this intuition applies to our variable selection problem as well. And another challenge here is that we have to choose this locally informed proposal scheme carefully, because if we choose it casually, then very often we will end up with we will end up with an MCMT algorithm that can get stuck at local modes. So let's consider this very naive way of implementing an informed proposal. So given the neighborhood N, which is the collection of all the states that I can move to by one addition or deletion or a swap move, let's propose a new state with probability proportional to the posterior. This is kind of the most naive way, the most straightforward way, I mean, of implementing a locally informed proposal scheme. But actually it's not going to work. It's going to fail completely. So we can consider a very simple scenario. Let's say gamma star has two variables, one and two. And let's say the current model is the empty set. Then of course, then we care about what's the transition probability from moving empty set to the model with just covariate one, or maybe the model with just covariate two. And then we can actually calculate that the transition probability from the empty set to the model with only covariate one is bounded by this ratio, by the ratio of the posterior probability of this singleton model to the posterior probability of the true model. And now if the sample size is sufficiently large, then of course the true model will have, you know, the posterior probability of the true model will goes to one. So this ratio will go to zero. And this will imply that although at the empty model, we will probably say keep proposing adding covariate one or maybe adding covariate two. But actually these proposals will almost always get rejected. And in effect, we will just stay at this empty set for a lot of iterations and the chain is not really moving. So this is not going to be a good algorithm. And actually, if we think about, well, this general definition of the locally informed proposal scheme, so we will see that the main reason here is that the main difficulty here is that we actually cannot really say much about this normalizing constant Z gamma. And this is because, well, we are considering say a discrete state space problem, and the posterior landscape can be very irregular, or more precisely speaking, we can say that the posterior landscape can change drastically if we just move, say, from the current state to a neighboring state. It's totally different from a continuous state space where we have, you know, continuity, and then we can say that if we move locally around the current point, the posterior landscape shouldn't change much, right? But for model selection problems, for probability distributions defined on discrete state spaces, well, they can be pretty irregular. And this normalizing constant can change drastically if we just move, say, from the current model to a neighboring model. And then this creates a lot of difficulty in designing efficient, locally informed proposal schemes. So we tried a lot of different ways to design this locally informed proposals. And eventually we found that a simple solution was just to use bounded proposal weights. So now I'm going to introduce our algorithm, which we call it LIF-MH, it is Michalski-Hastings algorithm with locally informed and thresholded proposals. And the idea of our algorithm is pretty simple. So first of all, let's partition the neighborhood of gamma into three subsets, the addition neighborhood, deletion neighborhood, and a swap neighborhood. And then let's perform the proposal weighting within each neighborhood separately. And here I'm using this function W to denote the proposal weight that I assigned to a neighboring state. And for every neighboring state, gamma prime in the current neighborhood, I'm just going to use this bounded proposal weights. So I will weight this proposal using the ratio pi gamma prime over pi gamma truncated at both sides. And then by properly choosing these truncation thresholds, we will obtain a locally informed MCMC algorithm that is very, very efficient, as we will see shortly. And the main result of our paper is that we can actually prove under essentially the same assumptions used by that paper of Young et al., you know, the paper on the random walk made Sharpe Hastings for the variable selection problem. The mixing time of our algorithm is bounded by Cn, where C is just a universal constant. So the point here is that this mixing rate does not depend on the parameter p. And we call this mixing rate dimension-free mixing because it doesn't depend on p. And the point here is that in high-dimensional settings, p is much larger than, so we care much more about p than the sample size. And if we compare this mixing rate of our little image algorithm with the mixing rate, with the mixing time bound of that random walk image Sharpe Hastings algorithm in the paper by Young et al., then we'll see that even after we take into account the fact that we need to locally evaluate the posterior landscape in every iteration, the total complexity of our little image algorithm is still smaller than the mixing time bound provided by Young et al.'s paper. And if you check our paper, you will see that the mixing time bound for our little image algorithm derived in our paper is even slightly smaller than this. Okay. But anyway, the difference is not so important, and I don't want to introduce those heavy notations. So that's why I just present this simpler version of our result. The mixing time bound can be bounded by a multiple of n, which is which arguably is kind of a surprising result. Okay. And before I talk about proof, let's do some simulation to check whether our algorithms work well in practice. So we first consider the simulation settings of Young et al.'s paper. It's a pretty simple setting where we always sample the true set gamma star such that the size of gamma star is equal to 10. So there are always just 10 influential covariates. And we always initialize our MCMC algorithms with a randomly generated model with 10 covariates. And when the signal to noise ratio is sufficiently large, well, then we expect that both random walk by Sharpe Hastings and little MH will be able to identify the posterior mode in a reasonable amount of time. And we observed that actually little MH is much, much faster than the random walk MH. So for n equal to 1,000, p equal to 5,000, and for an independent design matrix, random walk MH takes approximately 15 seconds to find the mode. And the little MH only takes about 0.1 seconds. And if we consider a correlated design matrix, then the advantage of little MH, well, is slightly more substantial actually. But if the true model is the empty model, then we will observe that the posterior landscape tends to be flat. And then in that case, random walk by Sharpe Hastings also performs pretty well. And actually it is slightly better than the little MH. And I want to make a point here on the computational aspects of the little MH. That is, well, recall that in every iteration of the little MH, we need to evaluate the posterior landscape in the current neighborhood, right? And this actually makes the so-called raw blackwellized estimation of beta easy. Okay. So here, this raw blackwellization means that we can estimate beta using conditioning. So we look at every entry of beta separately. For example, let's look at the first entry of the beta and let's condition on all the p minus one coordinates of the current model gamma. Let's condition on whether we have selected the other p minus one covariates in our current model. And let's see how the posterior probability changes if we include this variable or if we remove this variable. And by doing these conditioning calculations, we will be able to obtain a so-called raw blackwellized estimate of beta, which has a much smaller variance than the beta that we just sampled from the Mitchell Hastings algorithm. And if we look at say the performance of this Roblox-Rise estimate of beta, we will see that then actually it's just way much better than the betas that we sampled from the random walk Mitchell Hastings algorithm. But I don't want to emphasize too much on the advantages of this Roblox validation scheme because it is probably say a little bit controversial in the sense that, we don't expect that in general settings, Roblox validation is always going to help us in terms of the estimation of beta. For example, if the posterior is really multimodal, then perhaps the Roblox validation is not going to help us that much. However, the point I want to make here is that when we implement, say, a locally informed proposal schemes, when we do all those, you know, local evaluation of the posterior landscape in the neighborhood, these calculations, although they may look expensive, but they can be made use of in multiple different ways. We can use them to tune our proposal probabilities, and we can use them to calculate, for example, Roblox-Rise estimates of beta. And of course, we may say that, well, in reality, we will never have, say, we'll probably never encounter a unimodal posterior distribution. We'll have a distribution that is, say, somewhat multimodal. And then let's consider how our algorithm works for more realistic settings. So for the second simulation setting, I'm just going to sample this. So I'm going to consider, say, a much more complicated dependent structure for our design matrix. And I'm going to sample 100 inferential covariates randomly, and their effect size are sampled from normal distributions. So some inferential covariates, they may have larger effects. Some inferential covariates, they may have smaller effects. And because we have 100 inferential covariates and the design matrix has a very complicated dependent structure, so we expect that the posterior landscape will be multimodal. And now for this simulation setting, we still observe that the little MH algorithm performs much better than random walk Mitchell Hastings. And we can measure the performance of the two algorithms using the effective sample size, divided by the runtime. And we see that the effective sample size per second of little MH algorithm is always much larger than the effective sample size per second of the random walk Mitchell Hastings algorithm. And this says that, well, actually our little MH algorithm is also pretty efficient in terms of exploring, say, a realistic multimodal posterior distribution for the variable selection problem. And finally, we also consider the real data analysis. We tried some GWAS data sets, and N is approximately 5,000, and P is around 300,000. And for this very large real data set, we still observe that the little MH performs much better than the random walk MH. The effective sample size of random walk MH is just about 2 per minute, but the little MH has effective sample size approximately 33 per minute. Okay, finally, let me just briefly discuss, say, how we theoretically study the mixing time of our little MH algorithm.
You have 10 minutes left for the proof.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. Yeah. So we will use a drift condition approach. Okay. So this is what I mean by drift condition. So I guess I need to say skip the technical details here. And I want to say that, so recall that previously I was saying that, you know, for the random walk MH, people prove that the mixing rate using the pass method, right? And I said that pass methods are kind of the most widely used solutions for Markov chains on finite state spaces. But here we take a somewhat unusual drift condition approach. I say it is somewhat unusual because drift condition has been rarely used in the mixing time analysis of Mitchell Hastings algorithms on discrete state spaces. It has been drift condition approaches have been widely used for Gibbs samplers on continuous state spaces. So, But let's try drift condition approach for our algorithm. And another kind of unusual feature of our approach is that we actually prove, say, two different drift conditions for our lit mesh algorithm on a state space. And we will then try to combine these two drift conditions and then find a mixing time bound for our lit mesh algorithm. And to explain this two-stage drift condition, I want to first partition our state space. So I'm going to classify all the models into two groups. One is called underfitted models, and the other is called overfitted models. Of course, overfitted models just refer to the models that have already included all the influential covariates. And now we are going to prove one drift condition for all the overfitted models. One drift condition for all the overfitted models, and then we'll prove another drift condition for all the underfitted models. And then we'll try to combine these two drift conditions and show that the chain is going to mixing quickly. So this picture briefly illustrates, well, the idea of our proof. Well, this is our model space, and the most of the models are underfitted, which are represented by this gray area. And a small subset in this model space are overfitted models, which are represented by this blue circle. And now, why we propose this two-stage drift condition? Of course, it is based on some theoretical insights into the variable selection problem. There exists a lot of high-dimensional results for stepwise procedures for variable selection. And those results tell us that if the current model is underfitted, then we can always add some covariate to the current model so that we will be able to explain the variation in our response vector y. And once we have included all the influential covariates and the model becomes overfitted, then we will be able to remove those non-influential covariates because then they become kind of useless. So this intuition tells us that if we consider the behavior of the lit mesh algorithm and actually also the behavior of the random walk mesh algorithm for the variable selection problem, then if we start from an underfitted model, then the chain should first say kind of drifts towards the set of all the overfitted models so that we can explain, you know, the variation in Y. And once the chain arrives at this set of overfitted models, then we will drift towards the true model gamma star. So this is the main intuition behind our two-stage drift condition. One drift condition shows that the chain moves quickly from, say, any underfitted model to an overfitted model. And another drift condition shows that given once we arrive at an overfitted model, then we will quickly move towards the true model. So I'm going to skip these technical details. And in our paper, you will find some general results for how to efficiently combining two drift conditions on a state space. And in our paper, we actually derived these results for general state spaces. Okay. So these results, I mean, they are not limited to discrete state spaces. And actually you can also generalize our argument to the case of, you know, more than two drift conditions. You can consider three drift conditions, four drift conditions, et cetera. As long as the state space has such a nested structure, then you can use our argument to combine multiple drift conditions and then obtain a mixing time bound. So I think I will maybe use another 2 minutes to briefly discuss some generalization of the results that I have discussed so far. So so this lit mesh algorithm and all the intuition that I have been talking about, of course, can be applied to other model selection problems, I mean, other than the variable selection problem. And actually for any general discrete state spaces, we can prove some useful result for these locally informed MSMC schemes. We can actually prove that for any discrete state spaces, as long as the posterior distribution satisfies a unimodal condition, then we will be able to construct a locally informed MCMC algorithm such that its convergence rate can be bounded by a universal constant that doesn't depend on the number of variables P. So the dimension-free mixing can always be achieved for, you know, other model selection problems, not only the variable selection. And we can always say devise such locally informed proposal schemes that can achieve these dimension-free mixing rates. And then the critical step in all these in the devising of these locally informed proposals and the theoretical analysis of these locally informed MCMC is always to verify this unimodal condition. You want to prove that what the posterior distribution is unimodal, and then you will be able to use some arguments to establish the dimension-free mixing rate. So limited by time, I guess I'm just going to say quickly wrap up my talk. Okay, so today I have been talking about this little MH algorithm, which is kind of a simple, but we would say a pretty efficient solution to the variable selection problem, and it can attain a provable dimension-free mixing rate. And I want to say that, you know, for the locally informed algorithms, the proposal schemes, the implementation of the proposal scheme can always be easily parallelized. So actually in reality, it's not going to take, you know, it can be implemented in a much faster way than even those simulation results that I have shown. And because of the simplicity of our little MH algorithm, you can also combine our proposal schemes with other more advanced MCMC techniques, such as blocking, tempering, lifting, etc. But whether these advanced techniques are going to further improve the mixing rate or the total, or whether these skills are going to further reduce the total complexity of the algorithm, well, I guess it's pretty hard to say, and we need to do simulation to verify. And this methodology can be generalized to other model selection problems as well, as long as we can verify a so-called unimodal condition. And the limited by time, I cannot talk about the other problems, but in another of my joint work with my student, we have verified this unimodal condition for the sparse structured learning problem. So for the structured learning problem, for the graphical model problem, you can also say devise such locally informed MCMC methods, which will achieve a dimension-free mixing rate under some high-dimensional assumptions. So that's kind of all I want to talk about That's all I want to talk about today. Thank you very much for your attention. Yeah, I hope we still have time for questions. Yeah.
So thank you, John, for the great talk. So we still have 1 minute, perhaps one or two quick questions from the audience. Jeff? Okay, so any question from the audience?
Sorry, I was actually clapping, not putting my hand up, but I did have a, thank you, that was a lovely talk and really nicely explained. So I did have a question. At first sight, it looks like I need to calculate the marginal likelihoods to calculate those pies, right? So I'm thinking, do you have any suggestions on, is there like a randomized version of this or something? Like, is it enough to have unbiased estimates or something?
So in our paper, we were considering, you know, kind of a simple setting where the marginal likelihoods can be evaluated in a closed form. So I assume they are available. Essentially, this means that we are not considering, you know, a hierarchical model. So we assume that all the hyperparameters are given, so we can always, you know, evaluate this marginal likelihood easily. But if you want, if we have, say, unknown hyperparameters and the marginal likelihoods are not tractable, then maybe you can use, say, maybe those pseudo-marginal algorithms, and then try to combine, say, the pseudo-marginal MCMC with our, say, locally informed proposals, and then you will still be able to obtain similar results. Mm-hmm. I guess the main idea here is that essentially in this talk, I was just focusing on how to make the proposals.
Sure. So, I appreciate it. I think that what you're doing is very useful. And if I may, John, a second question would be, so that algorithm you wrote down with that truncation, you truncated the top and bottom, you know, the weights. I mean, that kind of came out of nowhere. You know, can you do better? Is that like, do you have a feeling that's the best you can do, or what's the intuition?
So, okay, thank you very much. It's a great question. I forgot to explain the intuition. So the main difficulty in designing these locally informed proposals is that although it's pretty easy to find a proposal that with high probability is going to propose those states with larger positive probabilities, the difficulty is that how can we make sure those proposals will get accepted? So that's the main difficulty. And to make the proposals get accepted, then you want to kind of make sure that you also want to take into account the proposal probability of moving back, right?
And
that proposal probability cannot be too small. So that's why eventually we found this truncation scheme, because if you use this truncation scheme, then the proposal probability of any state can be bounded. The proposal probability of any state can be bounded. So theoretically, this is a great advantage because it makes the proof possible, I would say.
And I see.
Yes. But so actually,
that's cool.
Yes. That's kind of the main intuition. I hope it is helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so any other quick questions from the audience? Okay, I think we can stop today. So thank you everyone for coming, and also thank Chuan again for the great talk. So this is the second last seminar this term. So we'll see you next Friday for the last seminar this term. So have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the kind invitation. Thank you very much for the great questions, and thank you very much for your attention. Thanks.
Yeah, let's thank the speaker again.
Thanks.